Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me is Mr. Chad Sharkcatcher Riley.
I brought my flippers.
And Spencer B-movie lover Williams.
Yeah.
And that's about as excited
Spencer
as I'm going to get
in
this show.
Spencer brought his snorkel.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an interesting show for you today as we will be reviewing Sharknado 6. Take that as you will. So we're going to be talking about it, getting into it, and we will divulge how interesting this movie is. So yeah, stick around. But before we do, Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of good news before we jump into that
good
movie.
News is what I'm all about. From prehistoric times to the far off future, the Filmlosophers just might always be brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Time will tell, of course. Don't get trapped in a nightmare world with Tara Reid's psychotic robot head, or do if that's your thing. Either way, make sure you subscribe to the Filmlosophers to get access to new episodes each Wednesday. We're available on your favorite streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Spencer, where else can they talk to us?
Other than a Sharknado movie where you would find the likes of LaToya Jackson, Al Roker, Tori Spelling, and Neil DeGrasse
Tyson. The sad thing is that this is all true.
It's all bringing back beautiful memories.
Come back to this because that's
you can hear the memories that are already formed coming back to
my brain is melting as I'm hearing this out loud.
Where can you find all these people at the same place? On our social media pages, of course, because we're yelling at each and every one of them.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we are.
Like our page on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We don't have a DeLorean to travel through time with, but we're building a great archive of episodes all the same. Visit our website at filmlosophers.com and take a look at our library of more than 100 episodes. Then listen to the ones that interest you the most. Probably not this one.
Oh, this one is going to be the top of the list.
Before we get into anything, I want to talk about what Eddie's been doing in the last couple of days. Because it seems to have been kind of like this downward trend of like, I don't want to do this. Right up to we got to the event where he was just so grumpy.
I sat in the back of the room watching what I could. Mm-hmm. We were over Spencer's house and we were watching this movie. For some odd reason, it was actually on TV. And we sat through this entire... Now, here's the thing. I've always told everybody on this episode, on this show, altogether, on this podcast, I am willing to give any movie a fair shake. That's kind of my motto. I will always do that. If you've already made 5 previous movies that are just completely ridiculous and, in my mind, unnecessary, why would you make a 6th one and then pretend to say, oh, this is the final one, and then expect people to actually believe that dribble? And then I allow Spencer to suck me in and tell me, oh, yeah, we're going to watch this so we can do it. I'm like, he's like, it's going to be good. This movie was not good. I could not move further away from the TV.
Hold on one sec. I meant the experience would be fun, not the movie. The movie's never.
You know what, Spence? You're lucky we're good friends. Because this.
I'm sensing some healthy tension here. I might be off base, but something tells me that the two of you are at odds, and that's going to be to our collective benefit. Because I'm going to level with you. And the audience, I did not watch this movie.
You have no idea how jealous I am of you that this movie is not in your brain.
I did watch the first 5. I have seen all 5 of the other movies. This one, because I was traveling, I was home with my family, I was thinking I was going to get time to watch it on Sci-Fi Channel, and that time just evaporated because we were having, you know, great heartwarming, connecting experiences, and I could not step away to behold the spectacle of the last Sharknado, It's About Time, which is the full title of this movie. But I will say I have vicariously lived through this movie via the two of you.
Oh my gosh.
And a few things that I've come across over the interwebs since it debuted over the weekend. So I still feel decently well prepared in terms of the story flow of the film. And, well,
see, here's the thing.
No, I can't say film. The made for TV movie. And I think I'm actually at an advantage over you because I didn't spend 2 hours of my time with commercial breaks and all that mess.
Oh my gosh!
Here's the thing.
it would have been fine had we just seen the movie and then skipped through the commercials and whatnot. That made it worse. Taco Bell partnered up with Sharknado, whatever.
Yes,
that was probably the worst / best marketing decision they could have done because it was memorable.
They put a shark in a hoodie in this commercial.
This was so stupid.
All I have to say is,
and then Taco Bell turned into what is that book series that you hate, Chad?
I don't know. What is the book series that I
Insurg-
hate?
Or Divergent?
Oh, the Divergent series.
It turned into a Divergent type of Taco Bell commercial. Divergent.
Here's why I think this is brilliant brand alignment, because the aftermath of a Taco Bell meal is a Sharknado. It just happens out the other end. So I think that this is a beautiful synergy between two prominent brands. No? Nobody?
Chad?
Yeah.
I'm just hoping we get through this without me saying something that I'm going to regret.
Aww.
That's all I'm going to say. And with that said,
I have a feeling it's not all you're going to say, and it's not all I'm going to say, and it certainly is not all that Spencer is going to say, because Spencer, I can see the light of excitement and joy all over his face.
I have many things to say about this movie. This movie made me feel a lot of feelings.
I'm sorry, what? This movie made you feel?
Yes.
You heard
maybe,
the man.
Maybe make you feel like stupid for watching it, but wow. I mean.
Oh, no.
I was like, I just spent 2 hours of my life watching this. This has the same appeal in my mind as The Amazing Bulk.
This was like, wow.
How about, you know what? I tell you what. How about we just jump right into this?
It's a low blow.
Okay, let's do
it. It's a low blow. That coming from the man who didn't actually have to see the film. That's lovely. That's rich. Well, I'll tell you what. Here we go. We're going to jump right into Sharknado 6, or what's the entire title, Chad?
The Last Sharknado, It's About Time.
Great. Well, with that said, Chad, why don't you also give us a synopsis.
In the sixth and final installment of the series, Finn Shepard will travel back in time in a Sharknado-turned time machine to resurrect his family by stopping the first Sharknado that started it all. In his quest, Finn will fight dinosaurs, knights, cowboys, and, of course, paper airplanes. No, not paper airplanes, sharks. This time, it's not a question of how to stop the Sharknadoes, it's when.
Oh my gosh, even the synopsis is horrible. Directed by Anthony C. Ferranti, the film stars Ian Ziering, Tara Reid, Cassandra Scirbo, Vivica A. Fox, Judah Friedlander, and many ridiculous cameos. Like, extremely way too many.
I mean, that's what it's known for.
There was enough to say, yeah, that was unnecessary.
There's more in two.
True. Okay, I'll give it this much. I enjoyed 1, 2, and 3. For the sake of its just pure entertainment factor.
Yes.
When you get to 6, this is like worse than like the Fast and the Furious franchise. Like, I would rather see the entire Fast and the Furious franchise all over again sitting next to Vin Diesel than watch Sharknado 6 again. And that's saying something. So, with that said,
I think there's going to be a battle royale scenario played out here at the table.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can be the referee, and Spencer,
I'm coming for you.
Just kidding.
No, you're not. You're always coming for me. What?
Quick little fact, the Sharknado cast actually tried to quit the movie after they found out it wasn't actually called Dark Skies. Ironically enough, the scripts that were passed out had the title of Dark Skies on them, and so it actually excited the cast, and they thought that was going to be the name of the new film they were going to be working on. Sadly enough, rumors spread, and they found out that, lo and behold, it actually has a Sharknado name in the title. Well,
which is so weird that that's the thing that kind of puts you off this movie. Like, didn't you read most of the script?
Not the first five films, but the fact that you're... No. Just...
Okay, when... like, I... First of all, wasn't Dark Skies a TV show?
Yes.
On TNT?
That might have been after the first Sharknado came out, though.
So, it's never going to be called that. I mean, just pay attention to your own industry. Secondly, when you have a performer the caliber of Tara Reid, who has admitted in press tour interviews that the first Sharknado script was, quote, the dumbest thing I've ever read, end quote.
Well, why, he's not wrong.
Like, why?
No, she's not.
Why would your expectation level be set anywhere but where we've ended up here? I mean, it's not like she hasn't been along for the ride. She was voted on whether or not she would return. And not only did viewers apparently, allegedly, vote that she return after, what, the third one? I think it was
the third one.
After the third one, they had a whole, like, vote. Like, will her character live or die? And then people voted that she would live. And so they, like, doubled down on Tara Reid for Sharknado 4 and Sharknado 5. This one, they've, like, quintupled down on her. I mean...
There was too much, almost.
Everywhere. So, yeah, I don't know. Dark Skies, like, to transcend the Sharknado label, which apparently is what they were hoping that this would do, that's more laughable than the movie itself.
I don't know.
In my humble opinion.
Well... Another quick note, essentially a play-by-play.
No, that's not a note. That's just us. That's our note.
Well, here's the thing. Much like the film and all its discombobulation.
We're going to essentially do a play-by-play of the film. So if you are one of those people who, like me, hasn't seen it, and maybe you don't want to, maybe we're going to be your surrogates for this experience, then we're going to essentially provide you with a somewhat spoilery... Okay, we're going to go full spoilers probably, but we're going to give you a play-by-play of the film, so if you don't want to see it, you can feel like you've kind of seen it.
So that you can feel like you've had to suffer much like us. All right, so obviously the film picks up right where Global Swarming, what a title, ended, with Finn and his robot wife's head traveling back through time to stop every Sharknado ever. Essentially, the film travels through from the dinosaur era to the time of Camelot, even the Revolutionary War, and even goes all the way to the future. So here are a little bit of the snippets. So Finn awakens Solo in the prehistoric ages as Gil's hologram informs him that he couldn't travel back through time. Obviously convenient enough so that way they didn't have to pay Dolph Lundgren to be in the film.
That was the first disappointment.
That
was a huge disappointment.
Major disappointment.
Dolph Lundgren out of that car. Ugh, that was so upsetting.
So first of all, Gil... is Finn's son.
Yes.
Who we first saw in the first Sharknado film.
No. He came around...
Yeah, he was a heli... He flew the helicopter.
No, that's Matt.
One.
He has two sons.
Oh.
Right. So Gil comes along later. I think it's around Sharknado.
Sorry, this
4.
Is why we need Cliff Notes about something like Sharknado. Yes, or Spencer.
Spencer, yeah, because yeah.
Yeah. So Finn has two sons and one daughter, just so we're all clear.
Yes. So the first son and daughter are gone.
Yes. Yes, at this point.
Yeah.
Well, because the oldest son died in, was it Nevada? In the last film.
He died wherever the family farm was. And then the daughter...
He died while he was building a Sharknado shelter.
Yeah, which on the family farm.
Just so stupid.
And the daughter died off screen because they didn't have any use for her.
Yeah. Well, this film really didn't either. So essentially... It gets to the point where Finn stares down this T-Rex. The T-Rex gets eaten by what else? A megalodon. Oh, wait, just in case you don't know, that's a shark.
It's a giant prehistoric shark.
Which, by the way, if you didn't get a chance to, listen to our second to last episode on the Meg.
Yeah.
And you can learn all about that. Apparently, Finn's son, Gil, has been going through time and saving a lot of his friends from before they died, so making it convenient for all the people who have died throughout all the last five films to show up coincidentally in this one place.
Interestingly, kinda
spritz around.
Though, he didn't save his brother and sister. So that's just the little thing on top.
Way to bring it home, Spencer.
Yeah,
literally.
That's not even the cherry on the top of this turd cake, because we soon find out that April, a.k.a. Tara Reid, who had allegedly died and was recreated in a robot form, was actually saved by her son and is alive in human form in the prehistoric era. And not only is she alive, she has learned.
She is the mother of...
how to control and fly a pterodactyl.
She's the mother of dactyls, as opposed to the mother of dragons.
She's riding a pterodactyl, Spencer.
Yes.
Eat that, Daenerys.
Oh, my gosh. And in only a year's time. They've only been in the prehistoric age for a year.
Now, this is the part that I was wildly confused on, because Sharknado 4, I believe, when they reassembled April... they made it sound like, you know, oh, she like most of her body was destroyed, but like, you know, we saved her brain type thing.
Right.
Not that, oh, we actually didn't bother to even look for her body because she was gone. We just made a robot April.
Spencer, I need to interrupt this conversation for a commercial break.
Sure.
In the same way that eating 17... spicy gorditas and chalupas is a bad idea. It's a bad idea to go too far down the well with analyzing something like this movie franchise.
This podcast is called The Filmlosophers, and we analyze things so you don't have to.
All right. You are free to eat your nacho fries and your... chimichangas. I don't know what Taco Bell serves, honestly. I only see commercials and I avoid.
I don't know.
Like an American, I'll eat all that stuff. Okay.
So back to our regular decent programming. So apparently...
you're welcome, Taco Bell.
Everybody decides that they need to stop the first Sharknado that is happening in the prehistoric era by having April's pterodactyl, by the way, which is named... Tara.
Yes.
With a P. With a P.
Okay, you're looking at me
I'm looking at you because of the fact...
I write this movie.
You.
Oh, my gosh.
You. They decide to jump on the pterodactyl and use its tail to swat meteorites at the Sharknado.
Brilliant.
All the while...
Oscar...
Don't you dare finish. You better be saying Oscar the Grouch, because you better not say
this man is about to drop his microphone.
I literally just
floor.
Almost lost it.
He's about to swat the microphone at me like it's a meteorite and I'm a Sharknado. I was going to say Oscar unworthy, but okay.
Oh, no, it is beyond unworthy. This thing swats meteorites into the mouth of a Sharknado. One singular shark. Mm-hmm. For some reason, one shark stands in one place to eat meteorites. Well, it didn't exactly fly. It was like... all the while...
just standing there on its fins.
Exactly. Gil gave Finn some little... what was that? A metal?
Pendant.
Whatever. And he gave it to him. And apparently it has the ability to help them travel through time...
yeah.
By going how fast, Spencer?
88 miles per hour.
Yes. Gee, I wonder where they got that from.
Which was wholly unnecessary. I mean, like, that just adds...
that was the only part that was unnecessary?
Great,
that
Scott.
Was the only part?
No, that wasn't the only. That was such a ripoff. I was like, wow. Like, they're lucky that no one's going to bother to sue them over this because they already know they have no money. But, yeah, like, because there's no like vehicle dependency here. So like they have this...
Oh, you mean aside from Terra? Yeah. Go ahead, continue.
Okay, so they have like this badge and they just need to get this badge up to 88 miles per hour to time travel.
Like, to just open the wormhole, not yes. even to go through it. It's just it they have to go 88 miles an hour to activate the badge.
Which is so weird.
The portal happens somewhere down the way.
Right.
Like, that's the stupidest thing in the world. Just literally put it on a string and start swinging it to get it to open up something.
Yeah, it's very...
Why do that when you can fly a dinosaur?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, well, because of the fact that they end up traveling through time to Camelot, and they have this cross-dressing Morgana who is...
was
like,
the best part of the movie.
That was...
so
I'm
ridiculous.
Not even going to say their name, because it
can't
was just...
say their name.
Don't... Yeah, go ahead, look it up. Knock yourself out.
You can look
I can,
it
I can
up,
tell you,
but we
I can
can't
tell you this
it.
Much. Her first name is Alaskan. That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, either way. But that was horrendous. And then you find out, apparently, the larger white guy who was with him turns into a smaller, older black woman.
Which, okay,
over the course of
off.
Just a transition, which has no... There's no answer as to why that happens.
It's okay. complicated. The dynamics of time travel, you're traveling through time and space... The molecules get rearranged, and sometimes you come out looking different than when you went in.
Mm, okay, but like...
okay, Willy Wonka. We're transferring Wonka bars over here.
Okay, but like, that was another one of the perplexing things. Why was that guy even there to begin with?
He was Why are any of them there? Why is this movie here? You want to talk about existentialism here? Let's talk about this film. Why is it here? Yeah,
because the adoring fans demanded it.
Well, especially after you left on a cliffhanger of Dolph Lundgren.
That was not at all like rewarded within this film.
It really would have been nice.
So they go to the time of Camelot. They're wondering why they're back there when they should have gone back to the regular future and everything would have been fixed. Nope. They have to go to Camelot so that they can destroy another Sharknado.
Uh-huh.
And they are taken... to Merlin, who this was probably the only bright spot in the entire film.
Bright spot?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
No.
This was perfect.
So why was he here?
Because who else could do it?
Anyone. And really, he should have said no. So anyway, Merlin turns out to be Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Exactly.
That was the massive disappointment.
That was not a disappointment. That was probably the only point I'm like, all right, now we got a movie.
No, okay. You're supposed to be holding yourself with class. There's no class here. It never existed.
If Al Roker can do numerous cameos over these,
he has no class
several
anymore.
Things, then Neil deGrasse Tyson can also, you know, do his like work his magic as Merlin. I mean, come on, it's Merlin. Who wouldn't want to be Merlin
in a Sharknado movie?
Absolutely,
everybody.
You know, all I have to say is dragon sharks.
Oh, my gosh. So they essentially have to destroy another Sharknado that is attacking Camelot. And Morgana, it doesn't help at all. And overuses the word bye way too many times. So I have to... Don't you dare. No. I will not allow that on this show. So... they end up using a catapult to launch themselves into the next vortex.
First of all, wait a minute. No. You can't not talk about Excalibur.
You mean the giant chainsaw that was stuck in the stone?
They went to Camelot for a reason.
Which makes no sense. Which makes no sense. Because then if he pulled the
it's like a chainsaw sword.
But if he pulled it out of the stone, then who's going to be... You know what? You know what? This is why. This is why.
I'm going to be honest. I actually don't understand why they went there either. Because to the plot, this does nothing. This is a time waster.
It moves the story forward, Spencer.
No,
to
it
where?
Doesn't. Yeah.
To Camelot.
Why?
And then
here's
what?
The thing. If you stop...
You didn't see this movie.
I understand. Chad.
I see your point. I'm still going to persist. And yet he persisted. If you stop the original Sharknado in prehistoric times, then that means that the original Sharknado happened some other time.
What? Oh,
why not Camelot?
No. No.
It doesn't mean you've prevented all of them. It means you've staved off the first one until another starting point.
The movie disagrees with you.
Okay.
Because their whole argument for going initially was to end the first one to stop the domino effect. Because the first one starts the next one, starts the next one.
I think you're way too invested into this movie, Spence. There's just too much going on. I just didn't like it because, first off, they totally ruined what Excalibur looked like. It was horrendous. And number two, it totally destroys the mythos. So then who becomes King Arthur? Who becomes King of Camelot? How does that story get resolved? And in my mind, here's the thing that actually disappoints me with you, Chad. You being the aficionado for all things King Arthur.
Love it.
How could you enjoy that? That's not good.
Again, bye.
He didn't see my God. That's why he just
All right. So we're going to move forward in time. And they end up catapulting themselves right into the Revolutionary War. They land right in the middle of a town as Paul Revere is running through yelling, the British are coming, the British are coming, and then saying, the sharks are coming, the sharks are coming. They end up running into Benjamin Franklin, who's played by Leslie Jordan, and Alexander Hamilton, who is played by none other than Ben Stein.
Bueller.
And George Washington, of course, who's played by Daryl Hammond. If you're not familiar with who Daryl Hammond is, Daryl Hammond is the guy who does a lot of the...
basically every president ever spoofed on SNL.
True. And he does...
He's done them at least once.
And he does his George Washington as if he was Bill Clinton. So he sounds like Bill Clinton acting as George Washington.
I did appreciate that.
Okay, that's hilarious.
That was actually pretty funny.
So the British are coming. Then the British essentially use the sharks, thinking that they're going to help them win the battle. Finn pretty much persuades them to let them use the fire or the cannonball so that they can shoot it. Oddly enough, so that they could shoot the cannons at the same time as the lightning hits, so that they could explode the cannonballs and destroy the Sharknado.
Also, I love the army's reaction to that explanation because Finn gives that same one and they just stare back at him like that made no sense.
Because I looked at the TV. I did exactly what they did. And I'm like, what? What? So, yeah. All the while this is happening, the guy who had turned into an older black woman is now back into a guy. No explanation. No rhyme or reason.
Sometimes things just figure themselves out again.
Life whatever. Finds a way.
Thank you, Dr. Malcolm.
You can just go, Spence.
Bye.
Oh my gosh. Another thing that was really weird, and I was like, this doesn't make any sense either. So in Camelot, the woman who played the guy, the woman who the guy had turned into,
right.
She stated that she was a physics teacher, right. And that's why she was important, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Then when they transitioned into the Revolutionary War,
right.
The guy says, I was a history teacher. This was my jam, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
What? None of that makes any sense.
She's a physics teacher. He's a history teacher. They're different people.
They both should have died.
Yes.
At the very beginning of this movie.
Yes. I still don't understand why he's a part of this. We don't need him or her at any part.
Listen, sometimes...
I like how Chad's coming in to give an explanation.
Sometimes things are very complex. You've got a quesadilla or you've got a burrito.
He's
and sometimes
about
you want a quesarito instead.
No, wait. We have to stop. Are you being under the table paid by Taco Bell?
I'm trying to get sponsorship for this freaking podcast, people. Hashtag Taco Bell.
All right, so they end up doing that. They end up shooting the cannonballs. The lightning strikes, you know, and boom.
Okay,
and,
wait. Before, you have to remember the he-she guy who keeps flip-flopping. Like, he decides to stay behind.
Well, that's after the fact.
No, he stays in colonial times.
No. Yeah. No, but that happens after they destroy the Sharknado.
Oh, I thought
that's
you were
that's what I'm
they
talking
were
about. Spencer,
okay.
Come on.
There,
come
lot.
On.
Give peace
like,
a
come
chance.
On.
There was
come
a,
on.
A combination of a lot and nothing happening in this
well,
movie.
Well, because of the fact
so
after
it's very confusing.
After they shoot the cannonballs and destroy the Sharknado, Nova, who's this
oh,
incredible
gosh,
troublemaker
Nova.
Who just I really wish Finn could have just taken Excalibur and run her through while they were in Camelot.
You can't do that. Nova is a legacy character.
Well, Nova was a pain in the rear end for this entire movie.
The whole movie.
Did you just say she was a legacy character?
Yes, I
well,
did.
She is. Yeah. She's from the first movie.
She's
no.
from the first movie twice.
She does not deserve that type of title or that role of honor. But she was just the person who showed up for casting call in the first film. That's it. Just don't do that.
I'm not going to dispute that. That's accurate.
No, you're right.
And so she's deciding that she wants to go and give a letter to her great-great-grandfather or whomever to give to their kids to tell them to not go fishing because this whole thing started because Nova's grandfather...
Her grandfather was...
killed by a shark.
Which is just insane. Like, no one is going to take a letter from someone. It's like, oh, I'm your great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter, and I need you to give this to my great-great-great-grandfather or my grandfather, so you need to figure out when in time that is so that it's delivered to the right guy.
Like, so Finn tells her that that's stupid. Don't do that. You're going to mess up time. But then they allow the fat history physics teacher to completely ruin history by allowing him to stay behind. Because this is my jam. This is what I taught all these years. This is where I'm going to stay. And sure enough, right as soon as they leave, he's like, so is there a place I can get a taco from or something?
Like, have fun with diseases because they did not have a cure for a lot of crap back then. So, like, and as a history teacher, you feel like he should know that before getting into this wagon.
Well, and then here's the other interesting
Spencer
thing.
With his public service announcements.
Don't time travel and stay in a past.
Don't stay
period.
In the past.
The past is awful.
You will die.
Which, mind you, the guy.
Dysentery. The Oregon Trail had better have taught us all a few things.
You have died of dysentery. Not to mention, he's carrying this massive, ridiculous-sized bat from the prehistoric era.
Mm-hmm. Well, he got it in Sharknado 2. And
I don't care where he got it from. The fact is he's carrying this around.
Eddie, it's a legacy prop.
He looked like Fred Flintstone, for God's sakes. Oh, my gosh. So Ben Franklin decides he's going to do his whole kite experiment, and he's going to tie the kite to a couple barrels of gunpowder that's attached to the back of a stagecoach. And this is how they propulse themselves to 88 miles an hour.
Yes.
To yes. essentially time jump to the next place.
Glory.
No. So we find themselves in the wild, wild west where the stagecoach just happens to drop right in the middle of a standoff between Billy the Kid, who's played by Jonathan Bennett. If you're not familiar with who he is, he was from the movie Mean Girls, and the local sheriff, who happens to be Dee Snider, who happens to be one of the vocalists for the 1980s rock band Twisted Sister.
Mm-hmm.
So Finn's arrested. Snider thinks he's in collusion with Billy the Kid, and they go to jail. He is trying to keep his son from getting hung because of the fact that if he gets in the way of his son, or if his son isn't able to do all the things that he's trying to do and get older and learn how to time travel, none of this will happen. So at least they're trying to stay consistent.
They're
at
not.
This point.
They're still not. Like, they're failing at consistency.
I'm trying here, Spence.
Oh,
I really am.
You.
You know
it's
what?
It's very hard. You're doing a great job.
And then apparently Vivica A. Fox was saved when she decided to touch the in part three or part two.
Two.
When she's in New York, right before she gets electrocuted and blows up,
uh-huh.
she ends up getting saved too, conveniently, and sent to the Wild Wild West.
Right.
So apparently Gil knew every single point as to where to drop people and leave them there for like X amount of time.
So Vivica A. Fox, her character Sky,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is a host in the Wild Wild West.
Oh my gosh.
He just
made
telling me?
He made a Westworld reference. You know what? I actually enjoy that more than this whole movie.
Yeah.
That just reference. I'm good. So this has been the film. No, I'm just so Vivica A. Fox shows up. She helps save Gil, and they both go and they save, or she goes and saves Finn, and they both go and save Gil. And then obviously you get a lot of these one-off liners from Dee Snider, like, I'm not going to take this anymore, and this is Twisted Mister, and blah, blah, blah. Ridiculous one-offs. And essentially, they have to go and destroy the next Sharknado. Now, ironically, they just found out, or everybody had just found out, that Finn has been carrying a burlap sack with them the entire time.
What's in the box?
What's in the box? He reveals that he's carrying the robotic head of his now alive wife. That's not creepy at all. Now,
so you've got a live human April and the robot head of robot April.
The live robot head of April. Because it's functional.
It's still talking.
Right.
Normally.
I'm tracking with you. I'm tracking.
Normally.
The logic checks out.
This type of situation would freak out anybody. Any normal actor or performer who is in this role would be like, oh my gosh, what is that? You know, something unique, something more appropriate. We get a side smile from Tara Reid. Finn, what is that?
Spot on acting right there.
Bye. And then Finn attempts to use the head to blast the Sharknado into oblivion.
Yeah, apparently her head has laser eyes. I really want to get into like this whole
you really do? Okay.
Dissonance with like robot April and real April, because the fact that they slid off like the robot being mostly human and it's like fully robot, that is really upsetting on so many levels.
That's literally the only part that upset you about this film.
Because
that and Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, like those two things really. No, seriously, those are the things that really bothered me the most. Because you were so distraught by losing your wife, you replaced her with a robot. She doesn't even have any of the memories.
I want to take just half a second and no more to briefly park on the term dissonance. Because once again, Spencer, you have done a marvelous job connecting this review back to our mandate as film philosophers to use big words to describe movies. And I appreciate that you have done so. Please carry on.
The fact that I don't even think this film has that in the script.
Between human April and robot April.
Yes. I thought you had to tell me I didn't use that word properly. Or
no, you absolutely did.
You.
It is the descriptive word for this entire franchise. Dissonance. It all don't make no sense.
No, it really doesn't.
None of this
and
makes
so,
any
like,
sense.
Then you've got like April holding on to her robot head, who's still talking, and it's like, why? Why would you do this to yourself? I just don't get it.
Money talks, apparently. So, after they destroy the Sharknado in
no,
the Wild West.
She read the script for the first one and said, this is the dumbest thing I, Tara Reid, have ever read. And still signed her name on the dotted line.
Oh. You're going to pay me how much? I can make rent this month?
You know what?
You
it's
go.
Completely consistent with her character. As a human being in life. Not her character on screen, but like Tara Reid.
I don't know. It seems to not be really
love
much
it.
Of a difference between the two. So they end up jumping onto a train. Another callback to Back to the Future.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
is it called the Hot Mess Express?
It should have been.
It should have been.
I don't know how he unconnected the other two carts to the train. Apparently, when a train car loses its back pieces, it jumps like about 40 miles an hour. Like
nice.
An additional. Yeah. Because that's what happened here. They let go of the other carts, and this thing just flew.
That's rocketed.
What happened in Back to the Future, based on not watching it.
They used fuel logs
based
to increase...
on not watching it, which obviously the people of this movie didn't.
I'm not even going to give a response.
Sometimes you got to drop the dead weight
yeah.
to go faster. Sharknado clearly understands this.
So anyway, they jump to 88 miles an hour. They They go to the future and end up in the 50s
yes.
where they he ends up running into his co-star, Tori Spelling, who happens to play his mother. Her actual real husband, played by Robbie Rist, plays his dad, and they're, I guess, apparently close to their grandson because they know of the quote-unquote professor. Mm-hmm. And so they use this really advanced laser ray to try to blast the Sharknado that occurs on the coast and pull out this like death ray looking thing to
yeah.
It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. I am happy, though, that this is probably the shortest time we spent in any of these eras, because everywhere else I felt like we were there way too long. This one lasted maybe 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I felt like we were there too long, too.
I can only imagine in a movie overpopulated by Tara Reid, when you pop into the 50s and you see Tori Spelling and you're like, oh, good heavens. Like, it needs to go quickly through that era and onto something else. Like, not you too.
Ian Ziering's like, there's only room for one 902 alumni here. It's like a Highlander moment. There can only be one.
There can only be one.
One.
So they essentially destroy the Sharknado there. I'm not too sure how, and I don't really care. And then he gives him, the dad happens to have this boss new car, gives it to Finn to go 88 miles an hour, and they go where they think they're supposed to be going, which is like in 2011, back at the very first film, the time frame of the very first film. But Nova, who's been salty ever since the Revolutionary War.
That was actually clever.
Yeah, well, I mean,
in a Sharknado movie, the term salty is spot on.
Mm-hmm. Nova ends up hacking the whatever device that they're using to go back in time.
I'm pretty sure it's called a flux capacitor.
You know what? I'm not even
great
gonna
Scott.
Yeah. And ends up taking everybody to 1997 instead in San Francisco rather than 2011 in Santa Monica, I believe it was. Ultimately, she wants to try to prevent her grandfather from actually getting eaten. It's a long back and forth between her and Finn, and her thinking she's going to do the right thing, and then her not doing the right thing, and then she's thinking she's going to do the right thing, and then she doesn't do the right thing. Nova just needed to die by this point. Like,
she really needed to just stop. Like, there's a difference between I'm going to go save my family and I'm going to go back in time and save my family. Like, one of those makes you who you are. The other is a thing that's happening now.
This was horrible. Like, her, you would think, all right, they're only going to do maybe one or two of these flip-flops from like, okay, I'm going to do what's right and then change. And then, okay, I'm going to do what's right and then change and then do what's right. This thing does that like at least five times. Like, all right, mm-hmm. We get it. You're not going to do what's right. Just do what's wrong so we can get out of here already. Like, seriously. And she essentially ends up, thank God Almighty,
biting the big one,
getting eaten. Thank you. She gets eaten. But at the same time, so does April, human April. And all the while he's trying to save April, human April, he drops the head of robotic April down to the bottom of the sea. Mm-hmm. And So Finn and Sky are the only two that are still left on the boat. Like I said,
we finally offloaded Tara Reid. That's brilliant.
Well, you would think, but it's worse because here's the thing: Finn and Sky decide the only way they're going to get up to 88 miles an hour is to throw a hook out, catch a shark. And let it pull them to 88 miles an hour.
I don't think I'm ready for this. You know what would make it better? Baja Blast Mountain Dew.
I knew he was going to do that.
From Taco Bell would make this a lot better. It's the only thing on the menu that I will order and consume.
Oh, my gosh.
Hashtag Taco Bell.
Mind you, yeah. we totally didn't mention the fact that the captain of the boat is Bernie Capel, who happened to be the Love Boat captain. Don't you dare. And for some reason, the flux capacitor is programmed oddly to jump them forward to 2013. The year
broken from the water.
Oh, yeah? Is that your grand synopsis there? Your grand hypothesis? It was broken by the water?
Well, you know, when it's fluxing and then it gets some water on it.
So they end up in 2013, which is overrun by robotic Aprils.
No.
Okay.
Those are real Aprils. Like, they're clones of the original April.
I like how you can't keep a straight face.
No, once we get to 20,000, I lose all. It goes bananas. Like, we're in, like, this Blade Runner-esque society with these robot sharks flying around, just patrolling the streets. And so, like, the clone Aprils bring Finn and Skye to, like, the queen of the entire area, who is the original robot April.
The fact that I have to re-remember all this garbage just hurts my brain.
It was amazing.
It was not amazing. And so
the April's robot head,
yes,
which was dropped to the bottom of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
at some point was retrieved, found. And then she took over the world.
It was found by fishermen, mm-hmm. and then had angst against Finn for not going in and saving him.
But got over that after 10,000 years, so we're fine.
Good.
No, she didn't.
That's what she said.
She was saying that they're going to be together forever, and that if she can't have him, nobody can.
She got over it initially, but then wasn't when he was all rude to her. And so, like, ooh.
There was more than one Tara Reid. That's the worst part of this scene.
It was Planet of the Aprils. That's the line they
use.
That's
literally the line they use. Well, so, oddly enough, apparently.
I mean, we made it this far. Why not?
Apparently.
Why not?
Apparently. They also found the body of the other real April and put her in some kind of stasis. And she's been frozen or some sort for the last forever.
18,000 years or so.
Exactly. Yeah. In perfect condition. And when she wakes up, you could not have any worse acting by anybody.
Which was so
you
perfect.
Could literally,
why are you hired, Tara?
You could literally record somebody waking up and get a better reaction than her. She, like, just opens her eyes. Oh, hey, Finn. Hey, what are you doing over there? Hey.
Your Tara Reid impersonation is on point, sir.
It's so good. Is Tara Reid in this house right now? Because it feels
Don't
like it.
You dare.
I see a great future for you on America's Got Talent.
Tara Reid impersonation.
I swear, we're never doing another one of these movies again.
It's the last one. It's about time.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Did you just really quote the title of the film in your statement? All right. So, he gets the flux capacitor. He gets thrust for some reason into creating the 88 mile per hour vortex.
Yeah, it's a bit iffy on that one.
Oh, here's the worst part. Skye, who tries to save Finn, gets
Vivica
frozen.
A. Fox.
Vivica A. Fox gets frozen in carbonite.
Yes.
It
Boba
wasn't
Fett.
Even. It was just
Boba Fett.
No, no.
Spencer has tears coming from his eyes.
So good.
Tears.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
How do you make a grown man cry? Hashtag Tara Reid impersonation.
So,
okay.
Finn decides he's going to travel back in time to when the fishermen found the head, which I don't even remember them mentioning a date or a location as to when the head was found.
They did not. He just found it. Which, interestingly enough...
Spencer, just finish this part. Just please, because I can't even get through this last part. I'm just...
Okay.
I mean, we're clearly poised for an epic showdown.
Yeah, okay. So Finn arrives on the boat from the very first movie. So, like, in the first movie, there's this weird standoff that made no sense about this captain and this guy in a pod of, like, 30,000 sharks. Nobody knew what they were talking about because it made no sense. So Finn shows up, and the fishermen pull in April's head. Like, right as he shows up. So,
because it's been down there since 1997.
Yes. Yeah. So she's been down there a while, and she, like, instantly turns on, and she's like, I knew you'd come for me. And, gosh, it was so bad. And then as he finds this head and is about to take on this Sharknado, which... is now the last Sharknado? Question mark. I was very confused by this.
Spencer, I don't even know. Just finish this, please.
Okay. Then Queen Robot April travels backwards somehow and takes on.
So there are takes two on the robot Aprils?
Yes, yeah. There are two robot Aprils. Which,
and a real point. April.
No. There's no real April.
There's no real April in this particular time because she stayed back in the future. The robotic head that was currently in the water is the one that was saved and in the bag. Uh-huh. The one from the future who's held that angst for 18,000 years or whatever, she's the one who travels back, actually takes the form of her son to trick Finn into giving her the flux capacitor so that way he couldn't travel anymore and so that they could be together for forever. He finds out, she goes nuts, and robot battle April.
Okay, wait. You skipped over a really big part, though. I'm
sorry, which part? Go ahead, by all means. Which part? Because none of this film was important. But
I can't wait for this.
Okay, the reason he found out it was Robot April in the first place is because she didn't say Semper Paratus like they've been saying all this other time. She said Semper something else that didn't make any sense. But, like, again.
What? Tara Reid not making any sense?
Again, like.
How dare they sully her good name?
Like, who built this robot? Microsoft? Because it was terrible. It couldn't get basics right about their life. Like, it should have known this. That was, like, the most basic question. It's like a multiple choice.
The devil's in the details, Spencer.
Literally, the writing went downhill in this last 20 minutes of this movie. It's just all garbo from here because of the fact that, here's the great thing. While they're trying to battle the Sharknado and each other, at some point, the head of April that was down in the water gets tossed into the air and gets swallowed by a shark. Now, here's the interesting thing. It doesn't actually get swallowed. You soon find out that the head makes its way to the front, and there's literally a shark flying through the air.
Its way to the front.
And April is steering the shark, her head, inside the mouth of the shark.
She's become one with the shark.
It's so stupid.
I must become my enemy in order to defeat my enemy.
And so all of a sudden, because they're all moving so fast, the time vortex begins to open, or I guess because they're battling back and forth over the flux capacitor, they end up opening this rip in time and cause all these things from time to start coming through and all these characters from time to start battling the Sharknados. So I think it's April who goes, "Finn, it's a Time-Nado!" Something like that. And they changed the name to Time-Nado.
Hashtag AGT auditions.
So, in the midst of the Time-Nado, you get people like Cleopatra, who's played by LaToya Jackson. You got Hitler, Confucius, and a Viking all fighting like crazy against all the sharks that are swimming around, or flying around, whatever. So, the head April decides to do her self-destruct sequence and tells Finn, "If I self-destruct..." I'm not even going to do the voice. I'm just going to say it. Because "If you self-destruct..." No.
Yes.
"Finn, if we self-destruct, we could totally blow up the tornado and reset the time."
You sound smarter than her.
So they share this really awkward kiss where he's practically kissing a shark, because that's what it looks like. She blows up, and then everything goes blank, and we return back to 2013 and in Santa Monica.
That doesn't make any sense either, though.
Spencer, is it supposed to make sense?
Okay, but like, so basically at this point, none of the Sharknados ever happened. So you should be sliding into like the beginning of the first movie. But for some reason, Tara Reid's still with him and now pregnant with Gil. Like, that doesn't match up to what has previously happened.
Because they were separated in the first film.
Yes, they should still be separated now.
Spencer.
It's the power of love.
This movie cast Cato Kaelin and Gary Busey in cameo roles.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't have to make sense.
I prefer it if it did, though.
Spencer, it's a Sharknado movie. There's no sense at all in these films. So, essentially, you find out that Finn and his family, which everybody's there, Nova was apparently in love with sharks again. Mark McGrath has an acting gig finally, and you have...
Well, he was in the second one. Or the third one?
There's a second one.
Second one, yeah.
Yeah. And you have Al Roker on the screen talking about how there's no storms in sight. It's a beautiful sunny day across the United States, apparently, because weather patterns work that way. And you have Finn saying he's going to be giving his... or selling the bar to Mark McGrath, and they're going to go and live in Oklahoma. I think that's where the farm was. Probably. Oklahoma.
That makes the most sense.
And they're going to go and live a life out there. And so he does this toast, blah, 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 whatever. Gary Busey's there, and he doesn't lose his mind. Bo Derek's there. It's like this whole, like, resetting of time, and we're back at the beginning, and all's well. And then it says Finn at the end of it.
To be fair, they've done that before, though.
Spencer, don't make it seem like there's going to be another one of these.
To be fair.
So that's essentially the movie in, like, a very...
I think that was
more
great.
Concise nutshell.
And if any parts of that were confusing, it was confusing to us, too.
Yeah, 100%. I think my biggest issue with this particular film... aside from the many, 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 many obvious ones, my biggest one is how much it felt it needed to rely on the strengths of other films to get its point across.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my biggest issue, obviously it's a B-movie, so we don't take it seriously, whatever. But the fact that this film relied so heavily on the Back to the Future franchise, not just the movies, but the entire franchise, mm-hmm. From the flux capacitor to the 88 miles per hour to the train to everything else, it was ridiculous. And I'm all for having fun, mind you, kidding aside, I'm all for having fun with movies. But come on, I mean, there could have been a little bit more intelligence, I guess you want to say.
Originality,
that's a great way to put it. That's actually a really good way to put it in how they could have translated this. But I mean, considering the fact that this is their last hurrah, they probably were at a point where, like, you know what? We're really relying heavily on that. Mm. Yeah, but you know what? The actors are already ready to go. They don't want to be on here because we just told them it's a Sharknado movie and they're about to leave. Maybe that was the conversation. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? But I think that's one of my biggest drawbacks for this film.
You know, I think that the film was missing the film. I keep saying that. The made-for-TV movie to cap off the franchise was missing one thing. And I think it's pretty obvious what it was.
Dolph Lundgren?
Puppy Monkey Baby. I think if they had...
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, I have
Puppy
to stop
Baby.
You now because that thing was disturbing, and I will not...
I agree.
I will not deal with that.
Hashtag Taco Bell.
I don't know. What about you, Spence? Were there any issues that you had with the film?
Any issues? There's many issues. Like, so many. Like,
Let's just fixate on one. What was one that really stood out to you? Because I know we could go through this film again and with a fine-tooth comb find all the millions and millions of things wrong with it. Let's just stick with one.
Okay, like, this film had some cool elements to it, and like some of the performances or lack of performances from certain people, like, I always enjoy that. But I feel like, especially when you compare this to the first movie, it's lacking that air of like original and fun. Like, this is more of like, we have to wrap up a film series and we're not quite sure how, so we're gonna just borrow from a whole bunch of other places and then like chart like a course that kind of is around that and doing things that we want to touch. And it's really awkward and not as good as the other ones that they've released, because some of the other ones had like some general like actual interesting things to see. Here, there's not really, like, if you saw a whole bunch of GIFs of this movie, I'd be like, yeah,
which
you're
I
fine.
Did.
Yeah, you're fine. You've got the experience.
So I don't need to watch the movie?
No, you'd be worse off for it.
It's true.
Wow.
I think the biggest thing that it did wrong was follow up after 5 with another film. Hmm. And I don't mean that to you know, be just mean or, you know, whatever. But I think number 5 was probably one of its better films.
Mm-hmm.
And the level as to which the story kind of drove through and had its fun with in part 5, I really actually thought that was like miles above where this was at.
Oh,
this definitely felt very one note, like only one direction. There was only one focus for the entire movie. You kind of saw how this was going to come about, and what was going to happen. It tried to play like Ring Around the Rosie with certain aspects, like that whole Nova part. Gosh. It tried to do that. It didn't, like, the sad parts in this movie didn't really actually play to any type of emotionality that I had, as like with the number five, which, mind you, they're not supposed to be emotional films, but like the scene when in part five where his son dies, you know, while on the phone with him. Oh, I mean, yeah. That actually had some really good, you know, emotional perspective for it. It was good. It was a decent scene. Mm-hmm. This one, I'm like, yeah, Nova could die. I'm good. April, yeah, she can go. Oh, Tara Reid's finally out of this? Shoot.
That's like, the best part. When you think Tara Reid's out, they just bring in 20 copies of her.
That was the worst part. But I think you're right. Like, the consistency from 1 through 5,
mm-hmm.
in terms of creating that fun roller coaster ride of a story. Obviously, it's absurd. Obviously, it's just a ridiculous storyline. But all in all, you still want to have some consistency through it. And I think one of the big things that was really missing from this,
mm-hmm.
was the fact that Thunder Levin, who was one of the original creators of this franchise, who has written every single one of these films, 1 through 5,
was not five.
Oh, he didn't do 5.
No, he wrote 1 through 4.
Okay, well, you can tell that the heart of this film and this franchise was not in this particular film.
Mm-hmm. And I could even tell a little bit from 5. I was like, there's something different about this. And it was probably him. Like, he apparently is a very good, like, you know, it's campy, it's fun, it's whatever. Like, he's apparently really good at that. Like, less so 5, but this movie was missing a lot of what he brought to the table, I think.
It's one of those things where you know that they're sitting there and they're thinking, I think it could use more dumb. I mean, that's what it is. Like, the more you go, the dumber they get. Like, it ratchets up the idiot factor. Like, the further along you go. The second one was dumber than the first. Mm-hmm. The third one was dumber than the second one. Then you voted on Tara Reid. Apparently, allegedly, America made the wrong choice. Even though everybody that I knew said, leave her dead.
No, keep her. Keep her until the end of time.
She crashed back down from outer space.
In a shark.
That didn't make any sense.
No, Thunder Levin was actually on the writing staff for Sharknado 5.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like I said, I think that was one of the bigger parts that was missing from that. Sorry.
And here you've got hashtag Oscar unworthy. You've got more Tara Reid, which is the epitome of ratcheting up the dumb factor.
But that's why she's so good, is because she doesn't bring
anything
to the
table. How dare you?
Tara Reid needs to go and just run back to whatever apartment she's in and just do voice work.
Oh my God.
Just to be a voice actor. Just, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, she could be a telemarketer or something. I don't know.
No.
So with that said, we're going to wrap up this review just with a pass or fail. I don't know if it's nice enough to really, I can't go any lower than 0 monocles, so we'll just be nice and give it a pass or fail as to why it passes or fails. Let's go ahead and start with Chad, from your perspective.
Sure. Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Oh my gosh.
That dog has been dead for so many years, and you brought that back.
Aww. This Sunday's National Dog Day. Why do you say
Spencer,
that
Spencer, we want what we want. I will not be silenced. And we need a sponsorship.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we're just going to move over to Spencer. Spencer, does the film pass or fail?
No.
Neither.
It just doesn't. Like, if you want something else, like, if you want a dumb, fun movie, watch the first one, the second one, the third one, fourth one, maybe the fourth one, but the fifth one, yeah, sure. The sixth one, no. Like,
the sixth one, no.
It's just not worth your time. Maybe if you want to see the Planet of the Tara Reids, like,
you can
take a look at that.
No.
Just a little bit.
God, no.
But the rest of it, I'd leave it.
Eddie, what about you?
What do you think?
Oh, this film bombs like a turd going down a long hallway. This thing can just keep moving and keep going. I can 100% do without.
But how does it get down the long hallway?
Because you fire it off and let it go. You do not. You better hope and pray it doesn't stop and lose momentum. As further the further away you can get away from it, the better it is.
It won't lose momentum because the start of that turd was a bag full of Taco Bell.
See, there you go. It fails for me, and I really, really hope that this is the last one, especially if they're not going to continue using Thunder Levin on their writing team. I think he's a huge part of the heart of this franchise, and I think without him, this film lost a lot of its heart. It really moved away from what the entire film franchise kind of has been about, which is fun, sharks, ridiculousness, chaos, and family. And I think the fact that this film moves away from that, it just becomes another B movie in my mind. So, yeah, but that about wraps up another fun episode and review of the film Lostpers. Again, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlostpers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlostpers101. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you happen to see this dribble and you want to let us know what you think, please keep your comments to yourself. But if you have a comment about any other movie, we'd love to hear it. Just to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. You got Axel. Axel?
Yeah, I think that's how they're pronouncing it. Yeah.
That does
the robot dog
look good.
Papillon?
Papillon.
Papillon. And the Happy Time Murders.
No.
It is just an Oscar-worthy weekend, ain't it?
So if you don't want to see Sharknado 6, any of these other movies seem like they might just
None of them look good at all. But if you happen to see any of them, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts. So again, this wraps up another episode. We thank you for listening. And from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.
Bye.